Hello and welcome to the podcast, What We Teach Our Children. I'm Kim Clyden. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent and empowered children? And they say it takes a village, or what we might call today a community. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded though by people who can support us, your family, friends and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. This podcast is about everyone who plays a role in that story at every level of society. There's been many conversations on this podcast about the influence one person can have in our lives. Humans need one consistent mentor to guide and champion them through the formative stages and into adulthood. Those influences come from not only within the family dynamic, but also people whom we spend time with, like teachers. How often have you heard a story about that one teacher in someone's life who took the time to understand, listen, and encourage? It takes a calm brain to learn. Therefore, a calm and dedicated teacher is required, right? Karen Argus is one of those teachers. Now the principal at Yungle Estate Primary School, Karen has experienced the full gamut of schools in more than 30 years of education. From cities to small towns and the Queensland outback. Her career choices have led her to appreciate the smaller regional schools, where she has expanded her skills to a trauma-based approach. Thanks for speaking with me, Karen.
What's the appeal of regional areas, and in particular smaller schools like this one?
Yeah, definitely a career choice for me. So some people, you know, they call them like a stepping stone school, which absolutely horrifies me because all schools are entitled to amazing teachers that are prepared to stick and stay. For me, I love teaching. So this gives me the opportunity to lead teaching as well as teach. So that's why I stay with it. I'm definitely a classroom teacher. It's what I love. I love working with students. I don't want to sit in an office all day. So that's why I'm here.
You're also the principal though, aren't you, here? How is that? I mean, how do you juggle those two roles?
Teaching principal, it's a really high workload. But the benefit of being a teaching principal is that if you see a way something can be done better, you have the ability to make that change so that, you know, you can just make sure that every student gets what every student needs. So that's why I love small schools. You know, Yungle is a beautiful little community and it's got so many positive attributes. So, you know, we have the rainforest that surrounds us and all of the amazing learning that comes with that. But we don't have like a post office or a shop or a place, a main street where the community can meet. So we have a community hall, but it's not quite the same as a main street where you can bump into people and have a chat sort of thing. So, you know, there's no library, there's no art gallery, there's no museum. So the school becomes like a bit of a hub. So a lot of the staff that I have here are also families. And so it makes a really like bonded sort of staff because we're all friends and we all socialize together. And so it's, you know, we're all really close and we care about each other, and I don't know, so it's, you know, it's one of the special things about a small school, I guess, and a small community.
You mentioned being surrounded by the rainforest. It's absolutely stunning up here. If people could just imagine, you know, the rolling green hills and the green trees and the wildlife that exists up here alone, what opportunities does it provide in the teaching space?
Yungle just went through the Q hydros, like pumped hydro situation. And so the school, we opted to try to remain neutral through that. And I think we did a really good job at that. But what our role was, so when they were talking about the destruction of platypus habitats, We used the opportunity when we taught information reports to educate the students about platypus, and they did research and they answered questions about things that were happening in the community. So platypus are local sort of to our area, and so it gave them an opportunity to understand what they heard adults talking about based on evidence that they found. So, you know, we use the local environment as much as we can to inform them about what's happening in their local area. We also use it as, we do a lot of like jelly printing, so we use it for an art source.
Jelly printing, I'm sorry, you'll have to explain that, I think.
Yeah, so we bought a whole series of like different sized jelly plates, which is just like a plate made of gelatin essentially. So it's like a rubbery plate. And then the students went out and collected different things from around like the rainforest floor, and they brought them back and they painted them, and they put it on the jelly plate and then they paint over it again, and you take them off and it makes patterns. And
apart from the creative benefits obviously to that, what do you think children take away from those exercises when they're really, you know, hands-on, having a tactile experience with nature?
I guess for me it wasn't even, it was a creative thing, but it was more than that. It was documenting something that potentially might not have been there in the future. So, you know, when you're recording what kinds of leaves are in the area, that's what you're doing when you, you know, you print leaves on a jelly plate and then you put them on paper. It is a creative activity, absolutely. And if a student wanted to take away from it that it was just a creative activity, they could. But in that process, they're also documenting what's here. And at that time, we weren't really sure what would be here if the dams went ahead. So it was a way of thinking about how permanent things are, and without an opinion behind it, like whether that was good or bad wasn't really relevant, you know, to us in the classroom as such. But it was just realizing that not everything was permanent. Just because it's always been there doesn't mean it always will be.
I understand that curriculums are set by a national agenda, but states also have some sort of say in the school system, the public school system. How much autonomy do you have as a principal and teacher within the curriculum to explore these ideas you've just been discussing?
I guess it depends on your approach to the curriculum. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of scope to bring whatever you need to bring to give the context to the curriculum. And I've always done that. And I think, you know, it makes it relevant to students if they understand, if they can apply it to something that's around them, or that, you know, that they see, or that they, you know, that's having an impact. So, you know, I think there's plenty of scope for context. And I think version 9, which starts next year, that's probably even more so in lots of ways.
A good example I saw myself today, the presentation of some of the poetry they've been writing as part of the curriculum. However, there was a distinct local flavour to a lot of it, and even the things they'd learnt through your experience with the pumped hydro. When teaching children those skills, that connection you just mentioned about them having an interest, how important is that for them to then deliver what we saw today?
I mean, you can't. So I can't say to them, you have to value the rainforest. So a lot of it comes directly from them. So they make the decision about, and they made the decision in all the poems that they wrote for this unit, they made the decision about where that would be. And that's why you had that range of, you know, the little girl that had gone to Switzerland and she referred to that. And then you have one.
It was all snow. It was so cool and nice. It was very different from our current heat.
Yeah. And then you've got the little girl who wrote about the oval because that's where she went. And then you had the opinion pieces from the older students who they did feel a sense of potentially what had happened and if the rainforest wasn't here, what that might be like. But all of those decisions were their own decisions. So I provided them with a scaffolding around what sorts of things do we do when we teach poetry and word choice and that type of thing. But the context they applied to it was entirely up to theirs. You know, it's entirely up to them about what they wanted to write about. And I think if you don't give them scope, you know, they don't grow for starters, because if starting to explore something and trying to find different words for it than words they would always use, that's one of the beautiful things about poetry, right, is word choice. And so, you know, we had a saying old term about, you know, how important, like, word choice is. It's so important. And we kept saying words matter, words matter, words matter all the way through. And so, you know, I saw words that they never have used before, but they did research and they looked into, oh, this word might work or this might work. So I think, you know, if you engage them in something and and they're doing something about something they're interested in, then you're just going to get way better outcomes. So they have a voice.
More likely to investigate.
Well, and they have a voice, you know, it gives them a voice. It gives them, they get to talk about something that they want to talk about. And I think that's so important.
I came here many, many, many years ago under a different guise and did an interview about the Stephanie Alexander program that exists here. Mm. And the students took me out to the garden. We picked some food. They took it back to the kitchen, prepared it and made me lunch. That program, does it still exist?
It does. So the Stephanie Alexander Kitchen Garden evolves, I think. So it depends. They've had a lot of principals here. I've been here for the last 2 years and it's changed from when I first arrived. So when I first arrived, I sat down with the staff and I said, what were some things that you love about this school and what were some things that you want to bring back? What were some things that you don't love and what were some things you wanted to get rid of? And one of the things they really love about this school is the garden, the kitchen garden, we call it. And so that was one of the things they wanted to bring back. So last year we just started by, we would go up and do gardening in the garden a couple of times a week and just trying to find our way and feel our way back to what it might look like. And then this year it's been weekly cooking, which some schools don't do, but we have such a beautiful kitchen downstairs. So they cook once a week. And sometimes that's food to share. Our values at the school are to care for others, care for the environment and have our fair share. And so what we find is when the students go out to the garden to get things to bring in to cook, they'll always throw some out into the yard. And so that's to make sure that the birds and all the animals get some too, like it's their fair share. So they only take what they need. They also make sure they leave some. So, which I think that's a really beautiful thing. So the values of the school are based around the permaculture values. So we've turned them into our school values. Some people might call them rules, but for us, they're just values. They're things that we aspire to be. So, you know, fair share can be a fair share of the teacher's time. It can be a fair share of a conversation. It can be a fair share of the food. So it's a whole bunch of different things for us. Caring for the environment can be, you know, caring for the classroom, it can be caring for the garden, it can be, you know, picking up rubbish because somebody's left it on the ground. And caring for others can be caring for our chickens as much as it is caring for each other. So our garden is everything, like, because it has a big impact on our school values as well, which also reflect the values in our community. So, yeah, it's really important to us.
Those types of learnings unavailable at every school, as I think you pointed out in there somewhere along the line. So I'm wondering, given your breadth of experience, what you think the children actually take away from those exercises of caring for a garden, you know, nurturing that, bringing it in, preparing it, sharing it, eating it, and then giving back to the environment. What are you seeing that's different from other schools?
Hopefully, I mean, I hope they take away the interconnectedness of everything. But I guess what we see is students that respect the environment, respect what's around them. When we go up into the garden, they're as respectful there as they are when they're sitting in the classroom. You know, those values that we have as a school, they're everywhere. You know, you often hear students saying to each other, oh, remember to care for that. You know, and it's just, I just hope that their life, it's a life, you know, an approach to life, and that they just take that sort of with them. And, you know, I mean, that's enough, I think. It doesn't have to be something profound. It just has to be putting great people out into the world and trying to make it a better place.
Modern day society, there's been a bit of a breakdown of the family dynamic with both parents having to work and the cost of living being so high these days, especially in Australia. What sort of life skills are they gaining out of even preparing food?
I mean, for our students, they learn how to grow. They learn how to grow things. So they had to think about something that they would prepare for their family or for the school. And they had to think about what ingredients they needed, and they weren't able to get them at the shop. So they had to go and think about what did they need to plant, how long was it going to take to grow, and then how were they going to prepare it to cook it. So, so they did a whole bunch of research before they even went into the kitchen, and they went into the garden before they went into the kitchen. So I think a love of and a better understanding of how things grow, and through that, how it's definitely that permaculture idea of everything being interconnected. And I think you take that away wherever you go, and you apply that wherever you go. So it wouldn't matter if you went and lived in the city, you would still realize that the food came from somewhere, and that, you know, fresh produce is, it definitely tastes better. But, you know, it's, I guess just, it is the interconnectedness of everything, and that no matter what you do, you're having an impact on something else. So I think, you know, students understanding that means that as adults they understand that, and there's a bit more of an understanding about, you know, how we treat each other, how we treat the environment.
But even having a basic understanding of what it takes to grow food, the time, the resources, energy before harvest may help them get an insight into the life of a farmer whom many of us are not connected with at all anymore.
Yeah, possibly. Some of our families are farmers, but so probably some of our students would have a really good understanding of that. But yeah, they do. They learn to understand, you know, how things grow together, how sometimes we leave the weeds because they provide nutrients in the soil, whereas, you know, lots of gardens, it's like pull the weeds out, whereas we use a permaculture system here, so we leave some of the weeds. Sometimes we let things grow until they seed, whereas some people are like, oh, quick, cut it off now. But sometimes we just like to let things grow and seed, and then we'll harvest the seeds and plant them again the next season. We just do what we do, I think.
That's fantastic. I mean, where to from here in relation to the permaculture approach on all levels? What are you looking forward to the most about next year?
So next year we've got a bit more of a deliberate plan around how we want to run our whole kitchen garden program. So this year it's been really about students learning cooking skills, whereas next year it's more around how can we cook to provide for our community. So we're looking at doing units over a whole term, where in the end it culminates in the students cooking something and inviting the community in. So in the beginning they'll survey and find out what kinds of things they like to eat, and then they'll plan a menu, they'll plant in the garden so that the produce is ready for them at the end of the term or at the end of the semester. So then they can, you know, run a little restaurant or just invite them in.
What role does understanding nutritional value of food play in that whole scope?
Health combines with cooking. So the health part of the curriculum is injected into what we do with the students in the cooking part of our program. So they learn about, you know, healthy food pyramids and all that type of thing in health, and then we apply that to cooking. So lots of what we cook is, and we also have students with different dietary requirements that they have to factor in. So we talk to the students a lot about that. So often they'll make their own pasta rather than purchase it, because there are certain ingredients that some students can't have. So then they have to do a bit of research on what sort of pasta can we make, because we can't have eggs, for example. So I guess, you know, it's just teaching them an awareness of other people and an awareness of other people's needs. And hopefully that comes through when they put their survey at the beginning of next term, They factored in a little bit of, oh, are you gluten intolerant? Or do you not eat meat? Are you vegetarian? You know, do you eat eggs? So, yeah, all that type of thing. Just making like little, you know, thoughtful citizens, hopefully.
How do you approach that global view for children and help them to understand if they focus on the solutions, maybe the problems don't seem so bad?
I think teachers are eternally optimistic. I mean, you know, I come to teaching with the belief that, you know, you're creating the next generation of leaders. So I look at the students in my room and I see their potential. So I guess I'm a bit, you know, I just think the world's in good hands. They're going to do amazing things. I guess you have to believe that. You know, raise my own kids, I feel the same way. They're going to be amazing people. They're going to make the world a better place. And I think the students that you teach, I think the same. They're going to make it a great place. The world's in good hands. We'll be right.
Karen, I believe you. And I am one of those people. I live in hope that one person can make a difference. And the more we encourage those people, the more people will come to join the party. It's been an amazing pleasure to be here with you. Thank you so much for hosting me today.
Thank you.
Principal Karen Argus sharing a vision of a future we can all aspire to. New year, new beginnings. Do you know someone who has a story to share about their childhood, parenting, worldview, or expertise that shapes a better world? I'd love to hear about it. Connect with me via my website. That's kimclidon.com. KimKleidon.com. You'll find those links in the description to this episode. You can also connect with me through Mimi's Children's Books on Facebook. I'd love to hear your feedback and suggestions. This podcast is recorded at Launchpad Studios thanks to Split Spaces.